head on over to jointhenerdclan.com to get all kinds of great bonus material from Blake and myself, including Blake's book club, Keep Calm and Crown On the podcast, as well as the bonus After Doc podcast episodes. There's so much that you don't want to miss out on in the Nerd Clan. So if you want to support an independently produced podcast like the one you're listening to right here, or just Mary and Blake Media in general, you can do that by going to jointhenerdclan.com to become part of the best community on the interwebs.
I do not want to be alone. I know that now. But what I do not know is how to be the man you need me to be. The man you truly deserve. I do not know how to do this.
Yes. You do.
Daphne.
I know you do. You stay. You stay, and we get through this. Together. If you do this, if we do this, then
nothing else will matter.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Bridgerton with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to Bridgerton on Netflix. So sit back, relax, and let's get ready to spill the tea. Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I wish I could just like hop dance the way that they were.
Without getting dizzy and nauseous?
Yeah, just straight up, just hopping, dancing, running around, going in circles.
I think one time around that circle,
I'd be done.
Spinning. It's pretty much like the Earth's orbit. You know, like you're going around the sun, but you're also spinning while you do it.
Right, yeah, no way. I would have fallen and broken my neck. Like,
not to mention bump into people. Yeah. How do you know when it's your turn to go in? It's like a rotary, like a driving rotary.
Right, you just got to like wait. And like hit the gas when
fingers.
You think.
Yeah.
You know you've been in that situation too when you hit the gas just you know, a little too late or a little too early. And then like the horns start going and you're in the middle of the rotary and it's just miserable.
Do they make a decision like there can only be eight couples in this circle spin around dance right now?
Yeah, is there like an unwritten rule that you have to follow?
And you count and you're like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We can do it.
We can do it.
Oh, crap.
Damn.
Judy just went in.
Sally and Joe just went in. Damn them. Took my spot.
Well, before we get into this episode, we would love to remind you that you can actually hit that subscribe button in your podcast app of choice. You can also find us on social media by searching for Mary and Blake. You can head to maryandblake.com to find all of our other podcasts and blogs because we appreciate the fact that you just binged Bridgerton.
Yes, you did.
And then you most likely binged the Bridgerton with Mary and Blake podcast. And you may have some free time in your life and you're like, what else can I do? I'm going to tell you, head on over to maryandblake.com. We have a slew of other shows that we've covered in addition to all these different podcasts and blogs. And we also have a Facebook group that we would love for you to check on out. You honestly just go to Facebook and you type Mary and Blake and you're going to see our group pop on up in the search bar.
That's it. That's all you need to do. Just look up Mary and Blake. Mav, are you ready to get into this episode? The finale of season one.
Oh, yes, I am.
Let's do it.
Great. So, Blake.
Yes.
Share with us the details of this episode.
The title for this episode was called After the Rain,
yes.
Which I think is an obvious reference to this episode. The rain's in the middle of their ball, mm-hmm. and we are left with the happiest of endings mm-hmm. for Simon and Daphne. Though, we don't get a happy ending for everybody. So,
nope.
I think it's inclusive of all the characters. In the show, What Happens After the Rain.
Correct.
So I really like that a lot.
Agreed.
The director was Ulrich Riley. You should know that name because he was the one who directed the last episode, the penultimate episode, Oceans Apart. And the writer was the showrunner and not the creator necessarily, but the showrunner for the show, Chris Van Dusen. So, and he helmed the premiere episode mm-hmm. of Bridgerton.
Very cool.
And that is that. Marvin, your cups of tea rating for the finale.
A solid 5.
I am not
full
surprised.
Cup.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
A full full cup of tea.
A full brimming cup of tea, complete with milk and sugar. Sweet, satisfying.
Is it a cube of sugar or is it just, you know?
You know, I'm down for the cube.
I kind of like the cube too.
Yeah.
Just because it's different. You don't really get cubes all that often.
And then you know, how much is in it? Not like it really matters.
Right.
But like, I'm down with
just
the cube.
Just give me all the sugar. Okay. Imagine if you went to like Dunkin', they were like, hey, give me 4 cubes. They'd be like, get out of here, guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
What,
it comes out of a machine.
Your tea rating, your cup rating.
I'm giving it a 4.7
cups
of tea.
Which is essentially a Mary's 5.
Yeah, I feel like they're probably translatable. Yeah, 4.7.
Is this your highest of the show?
Yes.
Wow.
And it's probably not the best episode of the show, but I know that is counterintuitive to what my rating
says. But you enjoyed it the most.
But I enjoyed it the most. And Mary and Blake commandment is, you know, how do you feel when you watch a show? That's what matters most. What do you feel? And what I felt in this episode was lots of catharsis, lots of anger and frustration and happiness. So because of that, I'm giving it a 4.7, and I feel like it wraps up a lot of what the show is trying to say while also giving us a few avenues to continue for future seasons. So 4.7, I think it does its job as a finale.
Speaking of future seasons.
Yes.
Netflix made a big shocking reveal about future seasons for Bridgerton.
Yes, it potentially could reach up to 8 seasons. Chris Van Dusen and those at Shondaland Media have arranged it so that if the show were to continue for as long as however Netflix wants to produce it, it could go up to 8 seasons.
Now, mind you, they were filming this season this time last year.
Yes.
So just to keep in mind, of course, we're still in the pandemic right now for them to try to figure things out. But yeah, that's very exciting for Bridgerton fans.
And given the nature of the show itself and the cost, the size, the amount of cast and crew that must be involved. I mean, you're talking a show that has, you know, nearly 5 to 6 main characters. Mm-hmm. Never mind all the secondary characters that are directly related to those main characters. So
lots of quarantining.
So much quarantining. The only show that I think would probably exceed this would be something along the lines of like This Is Us. And even then, I don't know.
Even then, half of the cast we haven't seen this season because they're just taking what we're calling a COVID nap.
Yeah.
Which means they're not on scene.
Right.
All right.
Right,
so
right.
Time for the GBGs.
Yes.
The good, the bad, and the great for the season finale of Bridgerton. My good was the painting scene.
Yep.
Not only was it amazing, and Blake and I both have this soft spot in our hearts where like when we're actual real adults, we do want to have a painting made of our family. Some grandiose painting. You know, granted we don't dress like that normally, but you know, it just kind of like gets at your heart. And so you get to see the scenery and you get to see how it's made. You know, they're in front of this backdrop and the artist already painted the backdrop, the faux backdrop in the painting, and he's focusing on Simon and Daphne, trying to get them ever so slightly together. And he is judging them up and down, okay? Like, oh, why don't you guys be a little closer? You can actually smile. Oh, okay. And then there's that moment when Simon puts his arm on Daphne's shoulder and they look at each other so longingly and they miss each other. And that's when, of course, the artist, you know, says like, this is pretty much the epitome of devotion.
Right.
And that is the word that he used. And I just thought it was so beautiful. My bad. There was like a 3-way tie for my bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your, well, give me the top one and then give me the two runners up.
By Marina.
Yeah. Hashtag by Marina.
You know, we spent so much time with her and I appreciate that her story is wrapped up and I hope it's wrapped up for good. Because I just didn't enjoy her as a character. I did not enjoy spending as much time as we did. I would have much preferred to spend more time, honestly, with like Penelope, with Eloise, with the Queen, like Lady Danbury. What does she do all day? I want people who I care about, who I'm interested about. None of which is Marina.
I've got a feeling she's coming back.
Anyway.
We ain't going to see the last of her.
My runners up for my bad is the poison bottle.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Yeah, just like walks in, it's like, slam, poison.
Yeah, he might as well have the skull and crossbones with X's
on it.
No joke.
I was like, okay, does that mean he dies? Does he, like, Are we supposed to interpret that he sees the bottle that says poison right in front of him? Are they going to force him to drink it?
Yeah.
That was just like cheesy and very awkward.
You know what
me.
That reminds me of?
What?
That reminds me of they got in the editing bay and they were like, this is not 100% clear. We need something to make it clear.
Like he walks in there with these guys and it's not clear that they kill him.
Yeah. So they're like, okay, let's get a shot of somebody putting a bottle down. It says literally says poison on
yes.
it. That's what that reminds me
and
of.
And then my other bad was just how I felt for Anthony. Like, I just felt so bad for him when he was leaving Senna. So we'll talk about him later, but I actually felt really bad for him, which is a change no matter how I felt for him
imagine
all season.
That.
I know. My great, you are Bridgerton. There is nothing you cannot do.
Mm.
The talk, that whole scene, when starting from when Lady Violet, Lady Bridgerton is talking with Daphne and Daphne's saying, I love my husband. I just don't know if it's enough to save this marriage. I don't know how to make things work. And we've gotten to see Violet talk about how much she loved her husband. And we've known this from day one. Daphne's talked about how much she looked up to her parents' marriage. So she just gets to say this. And I felt like Lady Bridgerton was saying it to me.
Sure.
Like, there is nothing you cannot do. I may have messed up. I may have not explained sex. I may not have done a lot of things right. But you, my darling, there is nothing that you cannot do. Yeah. And then from that going on to the rain, to the talk, to everything.
And there's something specific about her saying you're a Bridgerton.
Yes.
Like, there is a level of exceptionalism that mm-hmm. she truly believes that the Bridgerton name gives her the ability to really accomplish whatever she
yes.
so chooses. Whether or not there is any specificity in that, and if there's anything that has led to that assessment, I think is
it
yet to be
Daphne
seen.
It gave Daphne the placebo effect.
Certainly, absolutely. All right, for me, my good Lady Danbury telling everybody to go pound sand. Everybody get out.
Yes.
Time to go. You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here.
With her little cane.
Yeah, right?
She like, just, the no, cheese no. people were about to go. I love the cheese peeps because, A, they got back together.
Yes.
I needed them to get back together. During that rain scene.
Prince Achoo.
I was quite nervous for the food and the painting. More so the painting. Like, how long should it stay in the rain?
Yeah.
But also, guys, that's a lot of food you're wasting. So I've envisioned in my rewatches of this episode that the cheese peeps were like, the cheese table's empty. We must go save the cheese. And that's when Lady Danbury, you know, yeah, motions for everybody to stop.
No. Take a hike.
Yeah. And she even says it in front of the queen. I don't think she's ordering the queen per se. She's ordering everybody else to get the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah, but part of me thinks that Danbury's like, no, I don't care that you're the queen. This is their moment. You are the queen.
The queen's down. She's down for the love.
Well, yeah, because it's a reflection on her marriage that once
the
she
diamonds.
Once had,
mm-hmm.
and then it's escaped her. And I think I honestly believe that the queen, as much as she is like a scheming little bitty, I think she truly believes in love.
Agreed.
And especially when she sees her husband mm-hmm. suffering from the attack that he had. You could see it in her face.
Yes.
You know, and that gives a mode, well, at least a sliver of authenticity about her.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of it has been, you know, posturing and
like being mad at little Eloise.
Yeah, and facade. And, and being mad at Eloise. And I mean, I know it's part of the, at least within universe and in the real world, it's part of the costuming of it all. But like all the hair and the dresses and the makeup and everything. You know, it's a facade for the queen, you know, and this is I think her emotion towards her husband is a real one. All right, my bad though.
Okay, you're bad.
And this is something that I think can break the season.
Oh my gosh.
I think it can break the season if you want to be cynical about it.
Oh, well, I'm not going to be.
If you want to be analytical and you want to
I just
want
to have fun and watch a Netflix show that takes me out of the world today.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But if you wanted to watch television for the purposes of being analytical and breaking it down, the fact of the matter is we have Daphne and Simon mm-hmm. just they're happily back together after a speech and a half from Daphne. And maybe a little
They've
bit
been
of,
longing for each other all this time.
I know, but when you talk about, let's call it 25 years of boyhood mental repression. And then all of a sudden, they have this one little speech and everything's okay and we're willing to have kids and it's all set. It's a lot for me to accept. It's a lot, I think, for the show to wrap up this season-long courtship and then marriage and then real specific divide in this marriage, like with real intent, to wrap that up within 5 to 10 minutes.
Obviously, he's not a Pisces, and he's able to digest his feelings pretty quickly.
In the end, I just wish that the show, really, I wish that the show was probably 10 episodes.
I agree. Give us a little bit more bonding and stuff, because yes, she like finds out all of this about him and proclaims her love for her, but you're saying that you wanted time for him to do the same for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I wanted that moment. Like we talked about, I think a few episodes ago when they say, I burn for you.
Yes.
Did the show earn that moment?
Yep.
You know, if I squint at it, I'll say yes, they earned it. I'm not 100% sure they earned the resolution.
I'm down with it.
So I mean, it's not to say that I'm not down with it, and I'm willing to go along to get along.
It's been all this time. It's not just like one day. Hey, okay, now I'm going to forget my dad. It's been building up. It's been throughout their entire courtship. He loves Daphne. It's been through their now marriage. It's been through their ups and downs, and she gives him the acknowledgement that it's okay to be loved even if you're not perfect.
Sure.
That is the key. That's all he needed.
All you need is love. And, you know, love is what conquers all. And yes, that is the great theme of
So what's your great?
The show. But, you know, all right, we'll get into it later. My great is the bookends.
Oh, of course.
How can it not be? That's another Marion Blake commandment. You want to get to my heart, you give me a good bookend.
And explain.
That is accomplished in a couple of different ways. We'll analyze them a little bit further, I think, later on in the conversation. But first is the birthing scene that happens. That one that mirrors, you know, Daphne's birthing scene mirrors Simon's mother's birth. Mm-hmm. And then also the bees. The bees show up. Mm-hmm. And the season begins with a bee landing on the door knocker. And then the season ends with the bee on the windowsill flying away. There's some symbolism there that I think we're going to get into, but I just love a good bookend. And that's when you know, again, you feel like you're taken care of. You feel like we had a beginning, we have an ending, and in the middle, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it feels like a closed book. Okay, this is a full, complete story. And I like that. I like when that happens.
Nice.
So that is that. It might be now time, though, to get into the music that was used in this episode. Shall we, my darling?
We shall.
All right.
But only if you dance around in a circle while you're spinning me.
If you want to die, then yes, that's what we'll do. So the show revisited Max Richter.
Love.
This is, again, his recomposed version of Vivaldi, The Four Seasons. And this particular portion, or movement, if you will,
is spring,
which is important mm-hmm. because spring is a sign of rebirth, and spring is a sign of life, and the giving of life, so that when they have this moment, when they're dancing with each other, this is the beginning of their rebirth as a married couple.
Love it.
So,
and I just love that
song.
I love the original version. Yeah. I love Max Richter's version.
Oh, Max Richter.
All of it.
And if you get a chance, go download Max Richter's Four Seasons.
Yes.
It's amazing. And then go ahead and download the soundtrack to The Leftovers. Because that's even better. And I love this. So, yeah, this is it.
There
Spring
we go.
By Max Richter.
Love it. Thank you, Blake.
You're welcome.
You ready to get into the show?
Yes, that was the only one that was that was used.
Okay.
All right. So one thing before we get into the rest of the show, and it actually is pertinent to this episode.
Okay.
But one of the commenters on Facebook in our group sent us a message and said, hey, Blake, just listened to your latest episode. It was great. And I have two comments. One, the reason why they call it a period is because it is periodic. It happens at regular, mostly intervals. And I think a man invented that name. I'm with Mary. I like courses better.
Me too.
And number two, I'm surprised Blake didn't say anything about the fight scene between Anthony and Simon. It seemed like they sped it up. Or were my eyes playing tricks on me? It seemed like weird, like a superhero movie or something. Now, I don't have the name for this person just because I didn't copy it, and I'm not going to look it up as we do it right now. But please know that whoever you are, you have credit. Thank you so much for asking this question. And in that commenting thread, I did answer her question or at least address this comment. And it's, I think, a pertinent one about the filming aspect of it all. It's not necessarily that they changed – you know, like filming styles, or they didn't speed it up or whatever. Really what happens is when you have action scenes, there are different methods to film action scenes. So when you're getting two people fighting, or when you're seeing a superhero movie, things seem to move really quick, largely because they are moving quick. And the camera angle and the style of the picture itself just feels different. It feels more energetic. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is they lower the shutter speed. So it allows more light to come in, and you're getting more clarity in that photo. Another thing that happens is that they up the frame rate. So whenever you're watching something, like a film is filmed or movie is filmed at 24 frames per second. Right, so you see 24 frames of film in a second worth of film.
That's crazy.
So when you're doing an action scene, you're actually upping the frame rate. So sometimes what will happen is some filmmakers will go to 25 frames per second or 26 frames. Some filmmakers will go to 30 frames per second. And to the eye, it just looks a little different because you're getting more information. Again, you're getting more clarity. Mm-hmm. You're getting more information in the picture. Someone that used this to disastrous effect was Peter Jackson when he filmed The Hobbit.
Okay.
He filmed The Hobbit in 60 frames per second.
Why?
Just because he was experimenting and he wanted this really high quality like image. The problem is that when you film in a 60 frames per second, you as the viewer aren't trained to watch a movie at that high frame rate. Mm-hmm. You've been trained to watch it at 24 frames per second.
Okay.
So when you see 60 frames per second, it looks almost fake. And it looks like, you know, who uses these high frame rates is soap operas. They film in high frame rate. So it has that plastic look to it.
Yeah.
The Hobbit suffered from the same thing. When it came out, everyone was like, oh, 60 frames per second. And then everyone saw it. They were like, and they said, no, this looks awful.
Oh, no.
Technically, it's better.
Okay.
But it's not, because your eye is not trained to look at that way. So when that happens, you're getting more information. And the last thing that they do when they film these kind of scenes is that the camera is handheld. When you're watching Bridgerton, for the most part, you're seeing everything on a dolly. You're seeing everything that is stabilized.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch something that is handheld, the camera is jittery. It moves. It moves quickly. It moves without warning. And you see that happen in that scene. You saw that happen when things go to slow-mo when Simon and Daphne are dancing.
Yes.
And then also you see that happen too in the birthing scene when the camera is walking in to the room.
Mm-hmm.
It's a handheld camera.
Yeah.
And that's used to perpetuate and give you the idea that something is amiss. Something is not stable. It's a visual trick to teach you and to give you the sense that, whoa, what I'm watching is not right.
Mm-hmm.
Something is off or something is unstable. It's a visual cue to say, something is different here,
yeah,
other than what, and like usually what will happen too is somebody will use canted angles, like it's on an angle, whatever. It just, it's another visual cue to tell you that what you're watching is not normal.
Okay.
And so that is the explanation behind why that fight scene looked so different from the rest of the show.
Interesting.
So there you go. So that's some nerd filmmaking for you.
Yes, it is.
Okay, now that you've all woken up,
schnoosh.
You know, everybody's going.
No, some people do really love this stuff.
Yeah, it's filmmaking porn. That's what it really is. Like there, it's just great stuff.
Okay,
I could talk about it all day.
I know you could.
All right, so what do you got now? What do you have? For this episode, what stands out to you?
You know what doesn't stand out?
What's that?
Francesca, she's back.
Oh, you mean Peggy?
Yeah. Here comes the generals, Washington, Eliza, and Francesca. Like she's that little of a plot point, but she needs to come back.
Yes. Apparently, she was in Bath.
Yeah.
For the whole season.
Good for her. Now she's back, just in time for Colin to leave. Maybe there's some weird rule in the Bridgerton household that not all of the children can be there at once.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're doing it to save money, you know, for production.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to switch you out and bring you in.
Oh,
okay, so we get Francesca there, whatever. How about you? I've got some other things, but...
Well, I do want to talk about the mirroring,
yes,
at least.
You actually have, like, real things.
Yeah, I want to talk about the mirroring.
I have what people wore. I have sex.
Of the birthing scenes.
Okay.
And I use that term mirroring purposely because it is almost a shot-for-shot remake for Daphne's birthing scene to Simon's mother's birth scene.
Very cool.
However, when I say mirror, that's on purpose because a mirror, yes, is a remake of whatever you're looking at, but it is the opposite of what you're looking
mm-hmm.
at. Things appear backwards to you in a mirror, right?
Yep.
So you're looking at the other half of you, one yep. that you don't necessarily see all the time. It is the opposite of what you are. And that is what exactly happens in this birthing scene. Yes, the obvious thing is that Daphne does not die in birth, whereas Simon's mother does die in birth. But there are other things that occur in the birth scene,
too. The fact
too.
That Simon is by her side
Simon
during birth.
Simon is by her side Woo! Holding her hand, whereas his father was in the room,
yeah.
but then in the hallway. And another big thing that happens here, too, is the nurse takes the baby and gives it to Daphne, whereas in Simon's mm-hmm. birth, the nurse took the baby and gave it to his father.
Yep.
The mother was left, you know, in the
Bleeding
bed,
out,
just
yeah.
doing whatever she was doing.
Dying.
And couldn't even hold the kid before she croaks. In this case, the baby is given to Daphne, and then she asks Simon, would you like to hold him?
Yep.
And instead of holding the baby and taking it out into the hallway, he holds the baby and stays right next to Daphne.
Love it.
So not only is it a technical shot-for-shot remake, essentially, but it is a mirrored version of each other, which is excellent. And it feels like they took great care in making sure that this scene really speaks to the opposite of what Simon's
Agreed.
Birth was.
Agreed. I agree.
So I really like that,
Lovely.
Too. Lovely. Another thing that happens, too, is the bees.
Now, book readers are excited about the bees. Blake and I have not read the book yet. I will read this book, and I will read the series, but we are... Be clueless, okay?
Yeah, I don't know what happens.
So show being show,
yes.
Book being book, when you look at the bees, what do you interpret them as, Blake?
Well, I don't necessarily know. So I'm sure that there's a plot point at some juncture, at some juncture of the show, as I burp a little bit, I apologize.
So classy.
Yeah, I know. There was that Mexican burrito that I had.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure that there's a plot point that relates to the bee somehow, right? There's no way that they're going to make such a big fuss.
Or is it that it's just a little special thing, a little nod to the book readers?
Again, that's what I'm getting at. I'm sure that there was a plot point that's special to the book readers
yeah.
that involves bees at some point. In terms of the show itself, I don't know. So my thought was, well, you gotta go look out bee symbolism. What does a bee symbolize in...
For a mere show watcher.
For a mere show watcher, right? So the thing that I have endeavored to discover for this entire day, and I've looked at more bee material than I care to admit, but eventually I will sum it down. I will drive down it to you for this.
Okay.
For you book readers, you're probably laughing, but for those of you who are watching the show, bear with me. The bee symbolizes community and brightness and personal power. You're a bee will lead you to discover your new destination, if you will. And I think that works for this episode. The bee, and it works for the season. The bee begins the season going on the door knocker. And this season is a new journey, if you will. It's a new journey for all of our characters. And they discover their new purposes. They discover their new destinations. And the bee reappears when Daphne and Simon finally start a brand new journey together. And that is that. Something that also sticks with me, too, is that the druids, they saw the bee as symbolizing the sun or the goddess or celebration and community of all aspect of their life. And during these festivals, mead was usually consumed, mead, the drink.
Okay.
And the main ingredient of mead, of course, is honey, which is made from the honey bee. So it symbolizes life and sun and the birth, and which is again goes back to the idea of playing spring.
You're getting so deep, man.
I know. So when you are looking at bees, you're thinking about what are your goals in life, and you want to heed your inner voice and your inner wisdom. And that also applies to this episode because I think Simon does finally heed to inner wisdom, where he's like, I can have a child and be loved and not be perfect. And it's okay. He's no longer listening to his dad. He's listening to himself. And lastly, the Celts, which is significant to this area of the country that we're watching, they treated bees as family members. They would inform the bee about all the happenings, including weddings and births and deaths and family. And the beekeepers used to talk to bees calmly. For the Celts.
Oh, nice.
And in Scotland, people thought bees carried ancient knowledge from legends and philosophers. This led to the famous Scottish saying, ask the wise bee for what the druid knew. And some people, some Scots, believe that while you were sleeping, your soul left your body in the form of a bee. So is there some sort of like... history with bees in this family? Is it like relatives visiting the birth, visiting the home, that kind of thing? And I find that fantastic. I love that aspect of what the bee symbolizes.
Agreed.
For this family, for this show, and what the showrunners are trying to teach.
We're down
you.
For the bee, even though we don't even get it.
Yeah, no, I don't get it. But this is just my musings of what, you know, in the area bees symbolize.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's important.
It is important.
It's important to talk about. So that is that. I've been talking a lot, so I'm going to let you talk, Mary. I apologize.
Okay, let's bring on the fluff, okay? Anthony's sex scene with Sienna. I am going to miss the chemistry between those two actors next season.
Yep.
Goodness flipping me. There are moments, like, I love Daphne and Simon.
Sure.
But...
ooh, there's something hot and passionate about those two.
There is something so hot about Anthony and Sienna.
Yep.
Like, so hot. And mind you, none of it looks comfortable. I mean, we start off with Anthony and Sienna having sex against a tree. You know that her back got scratched up like Jamie Fraser's in that process. And then this one... oh, I couldn't stop because they're underneath the stadium stairs.
Yes.
And I just kept thinking about The Greatest Showman. Blake always calls Anthony,
Low rent Hugh Jackman.
You'll never be able to see him again the same way. He does. He looks like a very young Hugh Jackman.
He's a low rent Hugh Jackman and Kate and Leopold.
Yeah.
That's what he is.
Yep. There you go. So, you know, here he is underneath the stairs and it's like, this is the greatest show. Like, I'm just picturing like, boom, 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 the greatest showman soundtrack. Anyway.
Do you want to know something else that I do have to interject
please.
Here?
Please.
I find it apropos that these two are making love underneath all of the people. Like, what the inherent act of it has to take place below everybody. And so it's symbolizing like this is a sinful act. It is something that, you know, is, you know, inherently preposterous. They should not be doing it. And if you notice the coloring of that scene is engulfed in orange and red and, you know, stuff of fire.
Sienna's even
passion.
Wearing red in that
right,
scene.
Right.
Wow.
So think of that too. That is an inherent visual cue that what is going on between these two is wrong.
Oh, okay. You know what was visually completely different?
Absolutely.
What everyone at the Hastings ball.
Oh, all the blues and the grays.
Everyone wore the same color palette. They went to Home Depot and they got the swatch and they said, okay, everybody, everyone's dress except for the Featheringtons.
Yep. Yeah, not great, Bob.
Needs to be.
Not great.
Not great, Bob.
Needs to be blue. Blue, light shades of lavender, possibly gray. I actually liked it.
Yeah.
But I wonder if Daphne said, you must wear this color to my party.
Well, if you notice that a lot of the balls that everyone, there was a similar color palette for all the guests.
Like, is that a thing? Would that be a thing with the balls? Like, this is the color palette for this upcoming
dance. Yeah, maybe.
Dance.
I mean, who knows in real world, but like in this universe.
Yeah,
sure. Why not? I mean, that's what it feels like.
I mean, their flowers were along the same vein. You know, the decor was in the same vein. But, and then of course, as I said, you get the poor Featheringtons that are just standing out like a sore thumb.
Did not get the memo.
Or they just didn't have enough blue. Everyone bought all the blue fabric from the modiste.
I was just going to say from Joanne Fabrics. They didn't see the little star note on the bottom of the Evite, you know?
Please match your dress to the color of the font in this ring.
But again, another visual cue that something is off with the Featheringtons. You know, while they're there, you know, they are not one. Even though they were invited.
Let's have a moment for Mr. Featherington.
Oh, he got what he had coming to him a little bit. When you're dealing with those kind of people.
I don't exactly understand what happened. I also don't know who has the deed to the house. And I don't know what Mrs. Featherington was searching for in his desk. Was it the deed? Was it all the money?
It was the money. It was
so
the money.
Did he take all of that money and just go to the whorehouse?
No, I think what happened was while they were at the party.
Okay.
These people showed up. And took the money.
The bad guy
the bad
with the
guys.
Scar.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And so my interpretation of what happened.
It's very vague.
Yeah, my interpretation of what happened was these guys.
The bad guys.
The bad guys got a whiff of the fact that they lost because it was planned. And who set this whole thing up was Featherington. And he got all the money. And all of a sudden he just has the guts to say, okay, here's my house as collateral. I'm going to put all this money on this guy. And the guy just happens to win, like after seemingly dominating that entire fight. Mm-hmm. Now, these people, obviously, scar in the face.
Yeah.
Not good
people.
Not
their first time in the rodeo either.
So when they get cheated, you know, someone's got to pay the bill. And it was Baron Featherington that does that.
So you think that they also robbed his house after they killed him?
I think once they killed him, they went and robbed his house.
And took the deed? Can you just like straight up take a deed, or does the deed get inherited to somebody?
So the way that the show is writing it is that the deed, the estate, is inherited by somebody else. Right? So at least legally, right?
Okay.
Legally, right now in the real world, if you're going to pass, if you own your house outright.
That's how Marina comes back. Her dad.
That was my scribbling prediction.
Oh.
Thanks, Mary.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
This is why I don't have scribbling predictions. I just say everything out. Right when it comes train of thought. Choo-choo.
It's fine. Fine, fine.
I didn't even look at the Google Doc, sorry.
That's okay. It's no problem. So the way that it happens, legally, right now, if you own your house outright, you have your deed. Like kind of like your car. When you have your when you have what the title. When you have the title, that's your car. You own the title. if you want to give Yakaar to somebody, you have to sign the title over to them. Mm-hmm. Generally, you have to sell it to them. It could be for as little as a penny or as much as you want, as long as someone's willing to buy it. You have to have a bill of sale. In terms of the deed, you can sign over your house to somebody as long as it's a – in the real world, it has to, you know, it has to be authentic and the whole thing. So I'm operating under the assumption that the deed is inherited.
Okay.
And you have an inheritance laid out for the deed beforehand. Okay. That's the way that
all
I
right. look at it. Thanks.
You're welcome. I've been talking way too much in this episode. Continue.
We then get, speaking about the Featheringtons, we get the bombshell. It's Penelope.
Yeah, how do you feel about this?
Miss Whistledown. Well, we get that whole Eloise trying to save Miss Whistledown. Run, run, it's a trap. Oh my goodness gracious. Because the guy that you thought was Lady Whistledown, the queen's bestie.
Yeah, her right-hand man.
Yeah. He ends up telling Eloise once she so carefully, you know, strokes his ego. He tells her like, oh yeah, we're going to catch whoever it is. Here's our plan. We know that it happens while these balls are happening.
Right.
The writer goes and gets the stuff printed at this particular printing press. So Eloise takes off and goes to save the person and come to find out it is Penelope. And we find this out at the end of the episode.
Yes. How do you feel about that? First of all, how do you feel about the reveal? How do you feel that it is Penelope? We were right. What are your thoughts on this whole process?
I'm fine with it being Penelope because, as you said, like, this is who you and I have been thinking for the most recent episodes that it would be. I thought the reveal was quite fun. It was kind of like a little extra bow.
Yeah.
Like you and I said, we have to either know who Whistledown is halfway through the season or at least at the end of this season.
Yeah, I think the show made it a purpose to tell you that we're not going to do this with the wink, wink, nudge, nudge that we're going to tell you by the end of the season.
Yeah.
I think an issue that I have with it is Julie Andrews is obviously narrating it. And as the reveal is happening, Julie Andrews is saying, listen, you're not going to know who I am until I let you in, until I tell you. And the camera is focused on Penelope and she lifts her hood and the whole thing. I feel like those are two, philosophies at odds with each other.
Well, I think because we got to know and love Penelope so much as a character, it's going to be a fun adventure for us. Now we get to see how the Whistledown papers are made.
Right.
Papes, get your papes. You know, we get to see how carefully she has to be. And maybe it can be from her perspective. We're kind of like a little spy. We know who it is. How long will the Whistledown papers continue to be dispersed?
No, I love the idea of knowing who it is. Like, I think for future seasons, that will make a very interesting narrative to see. Like, when you go back now, knowing that Penelope is Lady Whistledown, that must recontextualize the whole season, you know, especially after what happens with Marina, knowing Penelope, knowing that if she does what she does, this is going to put her family in ruin.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And she does it anyway, just to be spiteful.
Yep.
You know, and she has these conversations.
Or to save Colin.
Well, yeah, but that's part of her spite, right? Like if I can't have Colin, nobody can.
But also, I don't want the love of my life to be conned into a false marriage.
That's true. That's a good point. So, I
love how we see things differently because you're a Slytherin and I'm a Gryffindor. I'm like, give her the benefit of the doubt, Blake.
You're a wizard, Harry.
She's looking out for Colin.
So, I think it'd be interesting. I think the point of contention I have is that the narrator is telling you one thing, but you're in her perspective and she's not revealing herself unless she chooses to do it. So, for you as the viewer, is she actually choosing to reveal herself to you as just the viewer?
I don't know.
I mean, it's up for interpretation. That's all.
You know what was not it for interpretation?
What's that?
The like unbuttoned shirt that Simon wears as he comes into Daphne's bedroom after the rain and everything.
Oh, yeah.
He gave me Wesley vibes from The Princess Bride.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I...
You know what I'm talking, Wesley. Oh, like, of course, yeah. As you wish. Yeah. He came in. I was like, oh my gosh, can anybody he please wear a mask?
It's my favorite joke from the entire Princess Bride.
It's so good.
It's just the best. Never gets old. The lighting was off.
We need to discuss
for this whole episode. Please go get into the lighting.
I am not a lighting person. Blake is the lighting nerd. I didn't know what time of day or night this ball was happening, because the ball was happening when the sun was out. It looked like it was an outdoor ball, henceforth why it could get rained upon. Okay. They were dancing and it was still lit up. There was still sunlight. And yet when Eloise escapes in the carriage to go warn Lady Whistledown, it's nighttime. When Anthony is going to pick up Sienna for the ball before it starts, or to be there still on time, It is nighttime. Like straight up nighttime.
Right.
Has like a candle in the window. So then we have this ball and it rains, still lit up, you know, but there are candles. So maybe it was like sunset time. And then Simon and Daphne, while they're getting together and then getting it on, there's birds chirping. It's like morning time, but they're still wet. And even his shirt is still a little wet. So it's made to seem like they came inside, they got undressed, she took her hair out, maybe an hour went by.
Sure.
And yet now it is 10 a.m. sunwise coming into her room.
I wouldn't say 10 a.m. I would...
8?
8.
Birds chirping. The lighting, I was just very confused.
It was what very time wonky. Is it? It was very wonky. You couldn't... even in the ball area, the lighting for the ball area, it mimicked daytime.
Yes. And that's what made me think, like, okay, I guess they're having a ball at like 3 p.m.
Yeah, but the...
But then nothing else lined up with that time frame, unless like Anthony was coming from a completely different time zone.
Well, but then again, Penelope leaves the ball... To go do the Whistledown paper.
Yeah.
And the Whistledown paper, the whole sting scene.
Wicked late.
Takes place in the middle of the dock.
Yeah.
And then they go back to the ball.
Yep.
And it looks, again, it looks like daylight. Now, I think that was probably just a mechanism of we have to shoot. And
we need this part to be suspenseful, and we need Anthony to be moody.
Yes. And we need the ball to look like... It's clear so we can see everybody. You know, number one, you don't want to have Game of Thrones syndrome where you can't see the big final battle of the Battle of Winterfell, right? You can't have that.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
But it needs to be light. It was a little wonky. I would love to talk to the director about the lighting and what the decision-making process was for the whole...
Because for a person like me, who doesn't notice the lighting, to be so confused, what time is it? Did Anthony miss the memo that the ball starts at noon? Like, why is he picking Sienna up at 9 p.m.?
Right.
No wonder she's having sex. She thought he stood her up. Oh, man. Yeah. So we'll just kind of get off that. But
speaking of having sex, let's talk about Marina here a little bit. I think I'm so conflicted about Marina. It's twofold.
Okay.
One thing that happens is really great, like really, really great. And it's the magic of editing, which I really like. There's a scene between Lady Featherington and Marina.
Mm-hmm.
And Marina seems to be on her way home. And we don't know for what purpose. We don't know what, maybe it's just the season is over. She's going home. They can't take care of her anymore. They don't have any money. They lost all the money, everything. This all has come to a head now, and Marina's got to go back. She asks Lady Featherington, how did you do it? How did you last a marriage for 20, 30 years, whatever it was, with that's loveless? How did you do it? And, you know, the whole explanation, oh, it's the little things and you learn to love and yada, yada. And it's relatively similar to something that Daphne suggests to Simon. Love is a choice. Like, you can do this, which I think plays well with it. But again, the magic of editing, what you realize without it being told to you straight out is that Marina is going down to be with the brother.
Yes.
And go live the rest of her life with the brother.
Yes.
And when you see that happening, you say, wow, okay, now I understand the context of that conversation. And they didn't spoon feed it to you. It wasn't the bottle of poison.
Yes.
You know, you had to engage with it to understand it. Mm-hmm. I loved that choice. I thought that was an excellent choice.
Agreed.
The problem is baked in to the conceit, which is she has to go marry the brother. Mm-hmm. I'm not in love with that choice. I'm not in love with her ending up the way that she did.
Maybe they'll end up falling in love. It'll be like Legends of the Fall.
Oh, where the lady falls in love with all three brothers?
Yeah. It'll be like that.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I just...
Or she'll be like, wow, I ended up getting the better brother.
Right?
Like, I thought I had it good.
Yeah.
But like,
this guy didn't get killed.
That guy was he's not killed, but like also he's younger. So he like saw what mistakes his brother made.
Yeah.
And he's a better cook.
Like, definitely a better pastry maker.
Obs.
Come on, man. Give me all the flour.
British baking show.
So much pudding. All the pudding. Yeah.
I can be down. I will, as Marina most likely will be in the next season because of inheritance or whatever, I will be open to her at that point.
I just think that Marina does a lot of bad stuff.
Agreed.
And
especially to Penelope.
She became a miniature Lady Featherington.
Yes.
Now, Lady Featherington had to pay the bill. And that is something that is important for that character.
Boom, boom, ding.
Yeah, literally, right? Marina doesn't. She kind of skates any kind of recompense.
Yeah, she's one of those people that just keeps landing on their feet. I mean, one can say no. She is pregnant.
But she fell up.
Tries to... Well, not really. I mean, her love is dead.
Yeah, but she is getting... Like, she's rescued by the brother, and he seems to be a stable, upstanding guy trying
to
do the right
thing.
Let's
see what it does for the rest of the sisters. Because that was the other thing. Miss Featherington was like, and then there's going to be room in your estate for your distant cousins. Like, you're going to need to bring us all there.
Right. Right.
So.
Unless one of the sisters marries Prince Achu.
Cheese.
The cheese guy.
Cheese guy.
Which, you know, is.
Oh, I cannot wait for that wedding. It's just going to be fondue.
So much fondue.
Then it's going to be a cheese board.
The Gruyere is going to be ecstatic.
Is there dessert cheese?
Of course there is.
Cheesecake?
Cheesecake? Chocolate-covered cheese?
They may have statues of cheese that you just take your crackers to and carve out, and it's like evolving art.
It's like strawberries and cheese, the strawberry juice and stuff, and the, you know, all the different jellies.
I'm down for this wedding.
Oh, yeah. I'm in. Another person that kind of skates, and I'm not 100% sure is going to continue to skate on all of this, is Will. Will.
Oh my God, I forgot who Will was.
Yeah, Will.
I went through the alphabet, A, B, C, D.
Will.
Will the boxer.
The boxer.
We don't really get to hear his name too awfully much.
Yeah, you hear it every once in a while.
Yeah.
Will does a deal with the devil here a little bit. And, you know, it gives up part of his honor for a good purpose. And for anybody that's been desperate and trying to take care of their family, I know I'm one of them. I've done things that I'm not proud of to take care of my family. So,
but he probably shouldn't have bought that necklace. Definitely. I mean, is that the best use of
all
money?
I could think of was Goodfellas when they finally robbed Lufthansa, and Robert De Niro says to everybody, don't make any big purchases. And then the first thing everybody does is go out and buy cars and furs and houses, and he has them all killed.
Yep.
That's all I could think of. And I kind of think here's a secondary scribbling prediction for you.
Oh, okay, since
you.
I ruined your first one?
Yeah. I'm doing this on the fly, too, by the way.
Okay.
Will is... Something happens to him. Because these guys know that he threw the fight. They know.
Yeah.
And it ain't over with Featherington. Yeah, they got their money back, but this guy screwed
him. But at what cost?
Yeah, so... Yeah, Will's wife is holding the necklace, And yeah, it's a big deal. And they're at the wedding, and he's all dressed up to the nines.
Not the wedding.
Oh, sorry, the ball, whatever. Whatever. So the stats are for nerds. And are you telling me that he's just going to he's just gonna be okay? Not with these people.
I mean, like him too.
I want to see the bottle of poison show up in his doorstep.
I would prefer that too. I mean, he's a family man.
Yeah, but he too has to pay the bill here a little
bit. He needs to get a regular job.
Yeah,
I can't be boxing all my life. So maybe it'll be something that'll physically happen to him. Like maybe somebody's going to like knife him. And then he's not going to be able to box, but then he can do something else. Or like the Duke.
Well, that was the idea. Like he was going to get all the money so that he didn't have to box going forward. He didn't have to put his life out on the line to make money and travel around wherever. He wanted a normal style job.
Yeah. He might want to own like a cheese shop because he knows that there's a lot of need for it.
Especially with the cheese guy getting married. Yep. There's going to be some demand there. And the cheese guy can't, you know, provide his own cheese.
Okay, so speaking of cheese, yep. Benedict.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Just like cheesy. I just am not into Benedict in this episode. I'm going to go sleep around with her. You were wrong about her. I'm going to doodle. Leave me alone. Ma, ma, ma.
And Anthony is kind of cool with it, by the way, only because
Anthony's doing it too.
He's doing it too. And I like the fact that Sienna tells him to go get a shine box.
I agree, but I was talking about Benedict.
No, I know, but I'm just saying
I was kind of schnooze fest on Benedict.
Yeah, because I don't know what he and Madame Delacroix are doing together.
I do.
Like, well, I mean, I know what they're doing.
Yeah, but did you see her hair?
I don't.
Ruffled.
I don't know. Lock if that's the door. I don't know if that's going anywhere. And, you know, is that something that, you know, as a Bridgerton, that is going to be accepted, especially when your sister is a duchess?
I mean, let's be real. He's so old. People probably...
His bestie is behind him.
Yeah. It's okay. Bless his heart. But Anthony, as Sienna is saying farewell, you need to let me go. That was the first time I felt for Anthony.
Yeah. There's this moment when the actor makes this choice of like staying...
Sorry,
he stays right there and he just like kind of like looks off and then he just looks back again. You could see like a decision being made. Yeah. It was a moment. This show is, because it's 8 episodes, it's moving. Mm-hmm. It's constantly moving. And the pace is like, it never really stops to stay on something. But in this particular case, they stayed right on him.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that choice.
Agreed.
I really liked that choice.
I was proud of Sienna for standing up. I don't think that he was necessarily asking her to change and be someone different than who she was. I think he was just saying, like, I'll take you to this really cool party tonight. We'll get you dressed up.
Yeah.
I think he knows, well aware, who she is, and he was willing to take that chance. So I feel sad that she thinks that he expected her to change, but maybe she really could have never worked inside his lifestyle, and maybe it would have just become more of an embarrassment for her to have gone. So proud choice to get out of a toxic relationship. Well done, Sienna. I felt all the Hugh Jackman vibes, though. Him standing there, it reminded me of The Greatest Showman when he comes back up to his wife and he's like, I really messed up.
I wanted to be more than who I was.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I was like, Hugh Jackman, it's okay. Oh, you're not Hugh Jackman. You're Anthony.
Low rent Hugh Jackman.
Yes. And then that moment, like you said, where they hold on him with the candlelight in the pitch black.
Right.
Confusing.
While it's daylight at the party.
And he like pouts and throws his flowers, which were perfectly good flowers. You bring that to the ball and you give them to your mom.
Right. Make her feel better
no
about
the situation.
No one's
bringing her flowers anymore. She's just talking about her dead husband the whole time. Come on, Anthony. What kind of first son are you? Just throw this flower. But he reminded me of Love Actually.
Okay.
When the guy's up at Keira Knightley's door and then he does all those signs and then he's like, okay, it's done.
By the way, Rick from The Walking Dead.
Yes. Messes with my brain. But you know, like when he turns away and he's like, I gave him my all.
Andrew Lincoln is his real name. Sorry.
I'm done.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like it was for Anthony. Like, okay, this is done.
And then he eventually admits to his brother that, okay, I'm going to get married, but I'm getting married for the sake of getting love out of the way. Just, I don't care about love. I just want to
I'm just going to do the things.
Which I think is a good, from what I know, the next book is about Anthony and his, you know,
partner. Okay.
And they're, you know,
well, I'm glad I felt something for Anthony now, because if I'm going to spend a season caring about him.
Right. And I think when we do our season wrap up, this is something that we should definitely get into. But I think that there is, you know, we talk about momentum going into the finale. I think the show has momentum going into the next season.
Yes, it's ready.
I think it's ready. I think it's prepared to go to the next season.
I don't know how it's going to do 8 seasons. Unless they really don't take breaks. Or else these people are going to be so old.
That's true. I mean,
maybe that's part of their character.
Yeah, maybe they grow.
Yeah, maybe we're supposed to see Eloise get married because by that point she's much older. Maybe we're supposed to see Francesca or Hyacinth or Gregory.
Right. Or it's like Harry Potter. Like, Harry Potter takes place in 7 years. Mm-hmm. And each year they made a film. And each year those kids grew. And that was the idea.
Yes.
So perhaps that's what Bridgerton is trying to do.
Is hoping to do.
Yeah, is hoping to do with itself.
Cool.
But again, I think that's part of the conversation we'll have for the wrap up.
Well, do you want to wrap this episode up is my question.
I do. There's one other thing that I want to say is the episode itself was an hour 12, which is more than its predecessors. Its predecessors were between 55 and 57 minutes generally. Mm-hmm. So we get more time in this episode, which gives us another, you know, quarter of an episode or so.
We needed it.
We definitely needed it. And I think it allowed the show to do some more things than it normally did, which is something like you said, Mary, low rent Hugh Jackman staring off into the distance, or Violet waking up.
Touching the pillow.
Oh. And, you know, just spending these few minutes just doing these little scenes that it never really had the time to do.
Agreed.
Which I think is important. I think it's important for the show. I think it's important for
all the work that was put into even just the decor. I mean, we got to spend some time even just walking down the hallway with Daphne.
Yep.
You know, you got to see these really cool shots and she bumps into the Duke and then she ends up finding the papers and stuff, the letters. But you just got to be there with her, those moments of silence.
Last question I have for you before we finalize our scribbling predictions. Last question I have is the beginning of this, well, halfway through the season, I think it was episode 4. We, you know, get a sense that, you know, love conquers all, and Lady Danbury is talking to Simon about the in-universe explanation for why there's, you know, people of color in these huge roles within British society, which is a really interesting aspect that I'm not sure the show really wanted to go down that route to continue talking about that conversation. And not necessarily like we need to make a stand on why this is all equal opportunity, but just to talk about the mythology within universe and how that happened. And we even have like instance where Simon's dad is telling him, listen, we have to be exceptional. We have to be.
Yeah.
Nothing ever comes of that. Like, there's never a threat to Simon's dukedom. There's never any more conversation about the world that was formed because the king married Queen Charlotte and love conquers all. Do you find that to be okay? Is that relevant to you, or is it just a nice piece of background information?
Well, I think as the series continues, because we know that they hope to have more seasons of this show, that it will be something that will be further explored.
Yes.
And that being said, I'm interested to see how much more inclusive they are of other races. You know, like, we obviously saw a fair share of black and brown faces and friends, but I didn't necessarily see a lot of Asians represented in this show.
Sure.
I didn't necessarily see a lot of Latinos. You know what I mean? Like, just people who looked different than the traditional time period piece in British high society. You know, I think that it definitely took a big step. And like you said, they acknowledged it in the plot a little bit to wet our whistle. Mm-hmm. It has not been addressed or brought up ever since. And so,
is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
I don't think it's something that I necessarily have thought of until right now.
Yep.
And I see it as something that It's just to be continued. Yeah. You know, I think that they've opened up this door and they've opened up this dialogue with the knowledge that they wanted to have more seasons. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm just very interested in this universe. I think that this is a exceptional and fun show, and I'm glad that we've been able to go down it, but especially, you know, like you're saying, the diversity to be able to bring it up in those couple of instances and then to not have anything follow through in the later parts leads me to believe that maybe more will come in season two.
I think I'll say this. Do I want an explanation? Do I want further explanation? Yeah, I think I'd like to do it. I think I'd like to go down that road and have a little bit more of the mythology explored of how this came to be and all of that.
But this is how like nerdy we are. We're like, give us the mythology
right
behind this completely fun, like magically colored
yeah
sex next to swans Netflix show that yeah we binged.
But then again, on the other hand, there are sometimes in a story, mm-hmm, the world that you create, some things just have to be because yes that's what it has to be. I think of Star Wars. Han Solo is sitting at that table and he has a history with Greedo. And there is a sense that Han Solo is a bad guy, but dashing, and he's good looking, he's and he's tough. He's a cowboy. And yeah. And he's talking about the Kessel Run and the whole thing. Do I need the information about the Kessel Run? Do I need to know why he's sitting at that table?
Do I need the Solo movie?
Do I need the Solo movie? No, I don't. It's just something that I accept because that's what the world demands of me. And so my whole point is this. If the show doesn't go back and explain any of it, if nothing comes of what Simon's father says to him, I think I'll be okay just knowing that that's what the world demands that I accept.
Agreed.
There are rules that I have to be okay with, and that might be one of them.
And I'm not just okay. I'm loving.
All right, you ready to finalize our
how do you still need to finalize your scribbling predictions?
Well, no, we're just going to memorialize it. Okay, here we go. Right. All right, number one, we know that the person that is going to inherit the Feathering Estate is a man. That's what the lady says to Lady Featherington when she hands the note. Mm-hmm. When Lady Featherington opens the note, she has a visceral reaction. So it's someone that they know. It's someone that she knows, like, personally. That would piss her off. So it... Is it like the Bridgertons? I don't know. I don't think so.
Is it Will?
Maybe. Maybe Will has an in on that deed. Possibly. Maybe that's part of the payoff, right? But that's a stretch. That's a stretch.
I don't think he would have given his house. But yeah, it's more like next in line because he's dead. We're looking at family.
Yeah, so it's got to be Marina's father, right? Because I don't think any of the characters that are already in the show would elicit that kind of reaction. And it wouldn't make sense to have it be a Bridgerton because they're already the main family.
Unless can it be like given to the bank? I mean, if he has the deed, it means that his house is paid for,
yeah,
I guess.
That it's
so
his.
Never mind. Yeah.
So it has to be someone that she knows, and it has to be someone that's somewhat related to the plot that we just
saw. That we've already
saw.
Known. Okay.
So it has to be Marina's dad.
Yes.
So that's what I'm going to say about that. The next one is that I think Will is going to get it. And that might be one of the things that happens early next season. And that's how Simon and Daphne are going to come back into the picture.
Back to London.
They're going to come back to London to deal with what happened to Will. That's my guess.
Okay.
That's my thought. So you got any scribbling predictions?
No, I never do. I just lay it all out as I talk about it.
All right, fair enough. You ready to close it out?
I sure am.
Let's do it.
I want a moment of props to Simon's amazing horse sound. when he was making the paper horse. I've watched it how many times. No, see, that's like, that's nothing compared to his horse.
Yeah, no, he's good.
The reverberations with inside his mouth, I can't even handle it.
Man's talented with his mouth.
Seriously, we saw that in the bookshelves.
or in on the stairs.
Yeah. Ladies and gents, this has been nothing but a pleasant and lovely and joyful experience to binge Bridgerton with you. You know, this year while we've been recording, 2020 and 2021, been crazy. And for you to join us as we escape to this colorful, fun world has been... It's been a true light.
Yeah, it's been a show that you can escape the world from. You know, you can get into this era, the Regency era, and especially in this alternative universe of the Regency era, and just be cool with it and enjoy not only the story but the beautiful costumes, the cool lighting, the different things that they tried to accomplish, and really engage in this community that has been birthed out of this show. One that I definitely did not expect. You know, I did not expect the kind of attention that our podcast and our various sites, especially jointhenerdclan.com, has received. Mm-hmm. It's been incredible just to chat with all of you and be a part of that.
So know that this isn't the end. Just because Bridgerton, the show, is currently done, the season is done, we will be having a wrap-up podcast episode. And then there's plenty of other shows that Blake and I are going to be podcasting about. In the meantime, we would love for you to check them out, maryandblake.com. And as Blake just mentioned, our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. If you have binged these podcast episodes and you enjoyed them, and this is the first time you've met Blake and I, know that one of the kindest things you can do for us right now is to head on over to jointhenerdclan.com. And for as little as $2 a month, that is less than your cup of coffee, you can contribute to this, to keep our site, to keep our podcasting fees. And honestly, this is what we do.
Yep.
This is my job, my job, and it's listener supported. And so if this has brought you joy, that is one of the best ways that you can keep it going.
And you can help keep an independent little company like ours afloat, especially during these times. So thank you everybody for taking the time to join us and get lost in the world of Bridgerton for a little bit.
As for now, my name is Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
Now go brew some more tea.
Atta girl.